Again, the 2-2. Fastball hit high and deep to left field. And the Blue Jays win it.
One of the most dramatic comebacks we have ever seen here at Rogers Center. Marcus Semien with a three-run home run beats his former team. What a ball game.
Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters, presented by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Today is Thursday, September 9th, 2021. My name is Arden Zwelling. He is Ben Nicholson-Smith. Our producers this week are Andrew Norton and Drew Livingstone. Thanks, as always, for their hard work. And thank you, as always, for listening. And thank you, Ben, for taking a moment here to explain to me what the hell is happening with the Toronto Blue Jays, who have won 7 straight, 10 of 11. Playoff odds are up, down, back up again. What the hell's going on, man?
It's been an incredible week. I don't think they've lost since we last recorded a podcast. I'm pretty sure that's true. I mean, they're undefeated in the month of September. They're playing amazing. I mean, even for people who, you know, were late to our last episode, it must have been a weird experience because, you know, we're talking about this team like, you know, we'll see. They got to play it out. They still got a shot. So you still got to see what can happen because you never know. Meanwhile, they're winning all these games. They are neck and neck now with the Yankees and Red Sox. Like, it almost gets to the point that you stop so much looking at the playoff odds and it's more just like, who are the Yankees playing? Who are the Red Sox playing? Because they're within a game and a half, 2 games of these teams right now. It's really becoming super interesting one way or another. They might lose, they might win. We don't know, obviously, but it's going to be a really interesting finish.
Well, and simultaneously, while the Blue Jays have been on this insane tear, the Yankees in free fall, 2-8 in their last 10. The Red Sox just kind of treading water, 500 in their last 10. Even the Rays, like 6-4 in their last 10. Nobody is playing well around the Blue Jays, the Mariners, Oakland, like none of these teams that they are competing with have been streaking as well. So while the Blue Jays have been like on this crazy upward trajectory, the teams ahead of them have been on a little bit of a downward trajectory, which has just intensified the results of this stretch. Like, the Blue Jays could have gone on this 7 in a row, 10 of 11 stretch and not made up that much ground, but they have made up a lot of ground because the other teams aren't playing well. Like, that is why the playoff odds are like swinging like crazy, because what is happening is so incredibly improbable. Like, it's improbable just that the Blue Jays would go on this streak, but it's also improbable that everyone else would suffer and struggle at the same time.
It was the best combination. I mean, at various points in the course of, you know, the last week or 10 days, of course, you and I are asked on various platforms, you know, do they have a chance? What would it take? And the logical answer to those questions is,
no.
Well, yeah, they have a small chance. Like, it's not a good chance. And if they're going to do this, they have to go on a run. And lo and behold, here they are. They won 10 of 11. They're playing great baseball. I mean, they're still, I've said all along, like, I think they're a really good team. That doesn't make them a perfect team. They still have bullpen issues. None of that's gone away. They still have some challenging games ahead against the Yankees and the Rays. There's nothing guaranteed here, but they are a very good team. They're on, as we record this right now, they're on an 89-win pace. And they do have a pretty good schedule remaining with the Orioles, with the Twins. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, to see where this leads. You know, it's baseball. Like, crazy things happen. It's a small sample of games, so they could go over the next 24. It could be 10-14 and it might be a disappointing finish, but if they keep this up, it might be, you know, 15-9. They could find themselves with 90 plus wins and be playing a wild card game.
Yeah, 91 wins is the target, because the Red Sox and Yankees still on pace for 91 wins, and those are the two teams in the wild card spots above the Toronto Blue Jays, who are a game and a half back with like 4 games in hand on the Red Sox and 1 on the Yankees. Blue Jays got to go 15-9, basically. Like, that's the target here, yeah, to get to 91 wins. I think that's a sound target. It might not be enough, but it gives you a pretty good chance. I don't think 89 is going to get it done. 90, if like a lot of things break your way, it's basically you got to go 15-9. But the thing is, when really improbable stuff has been happening for 7 to 10 days, the odds of that improbable stuff continuing to happen decrease by quite a bit. So it's probably most likely that the Blue Jays are going to come back down to earth a little bit, and the teams around them are going to start playing better, just going to make it harder to go 15-9 and to really make up the ground that the Blue Jays still need to make up. They've like confounded all season. Like, they have defied logical explanations. So even like looking at it that way, right, is what are we really going to learn? Like, there's 3 weeks left. Crazy stuff is going to happen. It's like, it's almost foolish to try to like look at this logically, or like look at this from like what the team actually is and try to predict what's going to happen. But I guess I'll ask you, how do you square this unstoppable juggernaut that we have seen for 7 to 10 days that is just flattening everything in its path with the fact that in Wednesday night's game against New York Yankees, you've got Jake Lamb plating Gerard Dyson with a sacrifice fly for an add-on run. And you've got Trevor Richards and Adam Simber facing high leverage. Like, how do you square what we're seeing from a Blue Jays team that is clearly still extremely top-heavy versus its results?
Man, I mean, those moments were kind of telling, right? Like, Simber and Richards, they've bounced back. The Jays need this. They need some guys to step up. At the same time, they're not your traditional eighth inning setup leverage relievers. That's not who they've been in their careers. And yet they got the job done, to their credit. And then you mentioned the Lamb and Dyson moment. And like, I can imagine that even some listeners of this podcast, like some diehard Blue Jays fans, could tune into that game for a moment and be like, what? Jake Lamb brought home Gerard Dyson? Yeah. Like, what's happening here? This team, like, it's kind of, I guess it's September baseball. You have those slightly expanded rosters, and we'll get to the third base situation a bit later. I mean, Jake Lamb, probably not the ideal candidate to be playing regularly for a contender, but here we are. And I think, like, how I square that to answer your question is, I think for people like us and people like our listeners who are so zoned in on the Blue Jays, we're going to see this team's flaws, and they're apparent. I mean, they have a third base issue. They have a center field issue. They have a Randall Grichuk issue and a leverage relief issue. Those are obvious problems for this team. And if they don't get to where they want to go, we can probably point to some of those things. And yet, I think if you're looking at this team from a slightly zoomed out lens, then you're more likely to see the strengths and the fact that this rotation's been incredible all year, and certainly in the second half, the fact that Jordan Romano has been great in leverage relief for them, and, you know, Vlad Jr. might win the Triple Crown this year. Like, I'm not even exaggerating. Like, this is not something that people are talking about, but he's 2 homers and 4 or 5 RBI away from legitimately winning the Triple Crown at age 22. So they've got a lot of great things going for them as well.
Yeah, they got a rotation that is like absolutely stacked and solid. And like, we can say, like, that's not a fluke. That's not just, you know, a group that is performing well lately. Like, this is a very good rotation. As you said, you got guys like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Marcus Semien having like MVP caliber seasons. Bo Bichette and Teoscar Hernandez are great, like, complementary players to that core. But it is top heavy, right? And everything we said last week is still true. Like, the depth of this team is not quality. And the bullpen, honestly, as a whole, is not quality. We'll see what Nate Pearson and Julian Merriweather can be. Maybe those guys can step in and solve some of those leverage relief issues that you were mentioning. But really, like, after Jordan Romano, there is a steep drop-off in this bullpen. It's a team that's still rough defensively, right? And those things could pop up in some of these leverage games and some of these tight spots that the Blue Jays are going to be in. Some of that stuff would pop up, I would bet, in a, like, final weekend series where you really need to win games to get into the wild card game, or in a wild card game. That's the type of stuff that could come up and really sabotage your chances. I guess there is just like that thing in the back of my head of, are the Blue Jays just playing good enough right now to make their postseason miss maximum torturous for fans?
It's possible.
to make it just that much more painful. But as a fan, as an observer, like, hey man, this is it. Like, this is why, like, we go through this insane, maddening, like, slog that is a baseball season, is for these like 3 weeks. And you can even expand it to, like, you know, to 4, to September. Like, this is it. This is the best part of a baseball season when you've been following a team all year. Like, you've gotten through it all. Like, it's an insane exercise, a baseball season, that we've gone through 135 games and gotten to a point over that large of a sample where we're like, the Blue Jays are actually only, I don't know, a game or two worse than the Yankees and Red Sox, maybe. Like, all these teams have gone through all that just to get to a point where they're only separated by a game or two. It's nuts. But this is it, man. Like, living in this moment, scoreboard watching, enjoying these games, like, seeing your team get hot, taking 3 of 3 so far. We'll see what happens on Thursday night in the Bronx from the Yankees, from a team that you're looking up at. Like, this is it, man. Like, this is what you live for as a Blue Jays fan, as a baseball fan. Like, these are the moments. They're pretty rare. They don't come around all that often. So it's time to live in this moment right now.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch baseball this time of year. I totally agree. It is the best time of year. It's a ton of fun. I mean, you know, you compare it to moments early in the season where, let's say it was April the 4th and they got Tanner Roark coming out of the game and Tommy Malone coming in. It's like, yeah, that wasn't quite as interesting as what we're seeing right now. This is a lot more interesting. The stakes are really high. It's so interesting. And I mean, the remarkable thing about this is, I mean, let's say they succeed. Let's say they go 15-9 and they win 91 games and they're in the playoffs. Like, what an amazing finish. Well, then you have a wild card game against, you know, either the Yankees or the Red Sox in all likelihood. And your prize for that is going to be facing the Tampa Bay Rays in a 5-game series. So, I mean, it's such a challenge. The goal, of course, for the Blue Jays, they've said all along, is to win the World Series. So they are not even close to getting there. But, you know, as Alek Manoah said after his start on Wednesday, no one can win anything. No one wins any championships in September. It's just a matter of trying to put yourself in the best position that you can.
They are running into some clubs at exactly the right time, aren't they? Like, if you kind of track this thing back and you look at it, this started with 2 or 3 against Detroit and 2 or 3 against Baltimore, which is, that's what you should do against those teams, really. And then the Blue Jays run into Oakland last weekend, who, with a bullpen that is just Oakland's bullpen, like, full on Chernobyl. Yeah. You think about that Friday game, Ben, you and I were on the desk for, like, the Blue Jays had no business winning that game at all. Like, that's, you want to talk about how improbable this streak is, that's one of the most improbable wins you're ever going to see. 8-2 in the eighth, are you kidding me? And they come back and win that game. Game two of that series then goes 10-8 for the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays get 6 runs off of Oakland's bullpen. Oakland gets 5 runs off of theirs. And then game three was like a legit clean win for the Blue Jays, like totally earned, no craziness, but still ran into Oakland's bullpen at exactly the right time. And now they've run into the Yankees at exactly the right time as they are in free fall. They didn't run into the Yankees when they were winning 13 in a row and like Stanton and Judge were going nuts. They ran into them at a time when the Yankees all of a sudden can't hit and they can't score. And they're in one of these like deep valleys they've had in this insane oscillating peaks and valleys season where Aaron Boone's like been fired 5 times, right? Like, they've had a nuts season, New York, but the Blue Jays ran into them at the perfect time. The Yankees walked 11 hitters on Wednesday night. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And the Blue Jays still like didn't really like blow them out in that game. Like, the Blue Jays had how many off ramps to a loss in that game did the Blue Jays pass? And they just were like white knuckling it straight through. It was not the most comfortable win in a game where they probably should have beat the Yankees by a lot more. And hey, look, Blue Jays earned these wins. They've made their odds that much better, obviously. Like, this helps. But I think we do have to point out that the Blue Jays have run into some very favorable spots here. They've had a lot of help from the other side. Whether or not that's going to continue, we have no idea.
Well, they do get to face Baltimore this weekend, so that's probably a good thing.
Baltimore's playing okay, yeah, man. Like, they're kind of a live dog right now, dude. They've won 4 or 5. Wow. They just took 2 or 3 off the Yankees, which, like, I know, like, the Yankees aren't playing well. And Baltimore blew a lead in the other one, too. Like, they're playing okay right now.
Well, I think the Jays will still be happy to go to Camden Yards and see what can happen over the course of those 4 games. But it's hard not to remark and think, you know, you look over to the National League East standings, the Jays would be in first.
Yeah.
And that's to say nothing of the fact that they would have been playing weaker competition all year long. Like, this is a really good team. Again, not an excuse. They might not make the playoffs this year. And so at that point, you're just a good team that's on the outside looking in, which gets you absolutely nowhere. But it's still pretty remarkable when you compare the AL East to some other divisions in baseball.
And that has been like a thing as long as I've been alive, literally, of, oh, the Blue Jays are in the AL East. How are they going to, like, it's never been a point where there hasn't been a really competitive AL East, at least that I can remember.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of what the Blue Jays are signed up for, right? Is that they're going to have to, like, beat some really good teams. They're going to have to deal with some teams that have a bunch more payroll than them. They're going to have to deal with a team in the Rays that seemingly drafts and develops and produces impact players a lot better than they have historically. And they're going to have some games against those Rays coming up, right? That's the thing. You're still going to have, what, you got six more against the Rays, got four more against the Yankees, and then you got those Baltimore games, and you got a bunch against Minnesota as well. Minnesota kind of a tough team to square, right? Because there's talent on that team, and that's a better team than their record indicates. Again, it's going to come down to how Minnesota's playing when the Blue Jays run into them. Because, like, look, this is as good as the Blue Jays have played and as much progress and ground as they've gained. It's not a fait accompli. Like, there's still, like, those playoff odds aren't over 50%. They still have a lot of work to do. Like I said, 15-9. This is it. This is what we've been waiting for. Baseball, like life, is just an interminable slog at the best of times. And we have gotten here to the good part and to the good point. That's why, like, I don't want to hear anything about Robbie Ray's free agency, what a Marcus Semien contract looks like. Dude, we have so much time this winter to get that sorted and to talk about that. For now, just enjoy these. Let's just enjoy these couple dozen games because this is it. This is what we've been waiting for. We finally got here. It's finally good. Let's just soak it in.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun. The contrast between last week and this week, by virtue of going undefeated, the Jays, if they go, you know, 2-5 in the week to come, that's still a massive problem. They can still play themselves out of this thing in the course of a week. The difference now is if they go 6-1 in the next week, or if they even go 5-2 in the next week, they could find themselves in playoff position, in the driver's seat, with, at that point, it would be 17 games to go. And I mean, that's great. I mean, they are really positioning themselves well, still with a ton of work to do. But like we've been saying, it's getting really interesting here.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, what is the worst the Blue Jays could play over the next seven, right? So you said 2-5. Like, to me, like 2-5, that's probably the end of the season, really, realistically. Like,
could be.
Could they go 3-4 over the next seven and still be okay, right?
I think so.
Probably okay. But then that would really, like, put them in a tough spot for, you know, the final however many games after that, right? So you basically got, let's look at, like, the next five.
Yeah.
So you got New York on Thursday night, and then you got four in Baltimore, right? So if you go 2-3, you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. You should be going 3-2, 4-1. Like, that's what you need. You need to keep this momentum rolling because then you got Tampa Bay and Minnesota after that.
Exactly. I think 3-2 in those five games, you got a doubleheader mixed in. Bullpen's going to be stretched. I mean, if you go 3-2, you're not thrilled, but you're okay with that.
2-3, you can survive. 1-4 would be tough.
1-4, that's pretty bad. So even right? Facing the Orioles, I mean, this is where the Jays have to be. Continue to be aggressive with their bullpen, for example. Use Jordan Romano back-to-back. Use Tim Mesa back-to-back. If you need to use Pearson for an inning and two-thirds because he's rolling that day, I mean, you can do those types of things. It's win time. You got to just chalk up those wins.
It's win time, and it has been win time for the Blue Jays over the last little stretch. Let's step away, and then when we come back, we'll kind of get into some of the nitty-gritty of what's going on with the Blue Jays and their performances and then what might happen going forward. All that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters, Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, and it is time now for Keeping It Light, presented by Miller Lite. Ben, this week, I want to talk about the Blue Jays catching position, because for the first time all year, the Blue Jays are getting some offensive production and a little bit of juice out of their catchers. Like many things, everything's going right for the Blue Jays right now. Things that haven't happened for them all season are happening right now. Catchers included. Over the last 30 days, Alejandro Kirk has seen 73 plate appearances, hitting 292, 356 OBP, 536 slug. Meanwhile, Danny Jansen has seen only 14 plate appearances, but has come through with a couple bombs, hitting 364, getting on base in half those 14 plate appearances. Reese McGuire, 38 plate appearances over that span. Very Reese McGuire line of 212 batting average, 289 OBP, 273 slug. Going forward, Blue Jays need to win. They need to be putting their best roster on the field, regardless of ego, regardless of who's banged up, playing time, of what you told guys, whatever. It's win time. You got to win these games. Who is catching the majority of the games for you, Ben, down the stretch for the Toronto Blue Jays?
To me, it's Kirk. He has hit the best, and that matters a lot. I mean, if you're getting four plate appearances a game and hitting the way he has, you have the chance to make a big impact. And especially at a time, you know, George Springer probably going to be taking up a fair amount of DH at bats. So, you know, your chances to use Kirk alongside another catcher probably aren't going to be as frequent. So yeah, to me, I would go with Kirk most of the time. Danny Jansen obviously works really well with Ryu, and Jansen has been hitting so well since he came back, so you want to mix him in. But, you know, I think it's telling that Reese McGuire in the month of September has only appeared in one game. And this is a guy who's probably caught, you know, the majority of games for this team in recent months. But clearly the Jays are agreeing with what I'm suggesting here and playing Kirk a ton, because he's been getting a lot of reps and it's cost Reese McGuire a lot of playing time.
Yeah, so I would be putting Reese McGuire aside. You got a great hot streak from him at a time when you needed it, when you had guys banged up through like July and August. That was great. That was helpful. Thank you, Reese. But for now, I think that like Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen are the guys. So to me, it hinges on George Springer. Like, how much is George Springer playing? George Springer ain't going to be in center field for the rest of the season. I feel pretty confident saying that. So when George Springer's in your lineup, he's got to be your designated hitter. That constricts what you can do with Kirk and Jansen, because I agree with you. I want Alejandro Kirk's bat in the lineup every day, the rest of the way, five out of six at the very least. But I don't necessarily want him behind the plate every day. I want Danny Jansen behind the plate more than Alejandro Kirk. So it depends on how much George Springer is playing. If George Springer is playing every day, well, then, yeah, you basically just kind of have to stomach a little bit of the defensive deficiencies you're going to see from Alejandro Kirk, because he's not a finished product defensively. I think Danny Jansen is a much better defensive catcher than he is right now. Defense still matters. Like, obviously, the Blue Jays need to hit. And part of the reason why, actually, like, they have been on this tear is that their bats finally came around at a time when their pitching has just been stable and their starting pitching has been really solid over the second half of the season. They've finally been getting some offense from especially, like, that bottom part of the order, where you got guys like Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Alejandro Kirk going off, and Danny Jansen with a couple bombs, as I said. So if Springer is kind of like a, you know, two out of three type of guy, then I am finding those opportunities to have Kirk in as my DH and Jansen in as my catcher hit ninth as often as I can. And credit to Blue Jays starters who have just been like solid regardless of who's catching them, right? Like, they've been dealing with a ton of different catchers that they're, remember Riley Adams, right? Like, they've had a bunch of different guys behind the plate throughout this season, and it's been constantly kind of like changing as guys have gotten hurt and other guys coming back and some guys' playing time has gone down. Like, Danny Jansen was essentially on like a phantom demotion for a while there, and Blue Jays starters have just been consistent no matter who's catching them, right? Like, Robbie Ray, front runner for the Cy Young. Like, Alek Manoah, super solid in his first MLB season. Like, Jose Berríos coming to a new team, working with guys he hasn't known before, had a little blip, but has been like more like the Jose Berríos that we have all gotten to know of late. Like, Blue Jays starters have just, no matter what, no matter who's behind the plate, have found ways to be effective and to be really good. Like, that is the backbone of this team, is the starting rotation. Like, that is the foundation, and the core is the only reason why the Blue Jays are competitive in this playoff race right now, is that their starting pitching from Hyunjin Ryu, Robbie Ray on down has been just solid. There have been very few like blow up outings where it is like, hey, our starter isn't getting out of the second tonight. It's happened once or twice this season, but more often than not, the Blue Jays have gotten consistent innings volume at a very good ERA from their starters, and it is by far the strength of this team, which is saying something on a club that has like a really, really good offense.
Right. I mean, they've been good all year, and yet you look at the second half in particular. I got some of the numbers right here. In the second half, 3.28 rotation ERA. I mean, think about if you had one starter with a 3.28 ERA, you'd say that guy's pretty good. Then you multiply that times five, that's your rotation. Like, that's great production. They've also had the most innings in the American League in the second half and the most WAR. So it's not just that they're going out there for these little five and dive starts that tax the bullpen. They're going out there and logging innings and then posting a 3.28 ERA. So it's been incredible. They've got an opening this weekend against the Orioles. I'm kind of presuming that Ross Stripling plays a role in that game to some extent, but they're going to need these guys. They have a lot of games and not a lot of off days. So it's not like you even consider going down to a four man, but they've been great. It's like you said, it's been a real strength of this team and they've needed it.
Your number five is Steven Matz. And Steven Matz led MLB in ERA in August.
Yeah.
And he has just continued to be really solid through September. Like, he's a guy who clearly has really good feel for his pitches right now, is locating them where he needs to be. Fastballs are up and they're in to righties. The changeup is playing well down the zone. His most recent outing, he's flipping in some really nice curveballs, which is something he hasn't really had throughout the season. Like, it's been mostly like fastball changeup throughout the year, and it's been fine for him. But if he starts getting that curveball going, like, look out, because that just changes the complexion of everything that he's doing as a hitter. You got to think about another pitch. If he's landing that curveball for strikes, I mean, that is so, so huge for him as a guy who relies on, you know, location and changing speeds. That's your number five. And like, Ross Stripling was really good before he went down to injury as well. So that's your 5B, I guess, or your six. Like, that's pretty good. You know, the depth beyond that gets pretty spotty. Like, Anthony Kay has not been great this year. Thomas Hatch hasn't been great in very brief MLB appearances. But it's okay because you only got 24 games left. You don't really need that depth anymore. Like, you're good unless absolute disaster strikes. You're good the rest of the way. And then if you get to the postseason, you're tightening your rotation up anyway. So like, what you've gotten from like that kind of five spot with guys like Matz and Stripling has been huge, 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 particularly when you've got the high upside of a Ray and a Ryu and a Berríos.
Absolutely. It's been one of the best rotations that I can remember watching. I mean, I think it was 16. They had seven starters that basically got them through the whole season, including some great performances from guys like Marco Estrada and Jay Happ at the time. But I mean, this is comparable. They're getting similar production from a similar group of really talented starters. And if they end up making it to the postseason and through that wildcard game, they're going to be really well set up to make their way through a division series.
And health too, by the way. The fact that Robbie Ray has held up all year and like came through the a period where his velo was down and his spin was down. It was starting to be kind of like, what's going on here? He's just come through it. Like, Robbie Ray is ridiculous. His durability is insane. Robbie Ray pitches like a reliever, max effort, two pitches.
Yeah.
But he does it for seven innings.
It's a good way to put it.
That's crazy. When he's throwing his bullpens, which, like, by the way, this is a guy who's gone every 5 days all season, has had a chance to take an extra day, hasn't taken it, has wanted to stay on his routine, has continued throwing his bullpens in between outings. Hyunjin Ryu, I don't know that he's thrown a bullpen all year. The guy doesn't do it just so he can, like, prioritize recovery. Robbie Ray, at max effort, is still throwing his bullpens. You hear them throughout the stadium at, you know, 3 o'clock p.m. on a Thursday afternoon at Rogers Center. That's how hard this guy's going in his bullpens. It is wild, the durability and the way that he has held up through this, the results he has continued to get while throwing two pitches at max effort over seven.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, with Cole's injury, he probably does become a Cy Young, you know, favorite at this point. A co-favorite at worst, maybe a favorite. And he belongs there in that discussion.
Absolutely. Hyunjin Ryu had that one little 10-day blip on the IL, but otherwise has like gotten through some stuff. And Blue Jays also kind of snuck him a little bit of rest around the All-Star break. They gave him it was essentially an IL stint around the All-Star break. They just didn't put him on, but like, they've gotten him through the season and he's been durable. Jose Berríos, one of the hallmarks of his career is durability. Alek Manoah has come up and he had a little slip, fell on the stairs, a little back contusion, didn't miss that much time with it. here he is, like at the end of the season, still making starts, still pitching effectively. A guy who, you know, coming into the year, looking at his historical workload, you might have thought, well, okay, maybe we'll get some starts out of him, but then they'll have to dial it back towards the end of the season or shift him to a bullpen role, kind of manage the workload. Nah, dude's still making starts.
It's been great. I mean, so really what you end up with is a pitching staff where, you know, from a stress of the organization standpoint, it's hard to imagine that that pitching staff is causing them to lose a lot of sleep in the rotation. So then you get to the bullpen and it becomes more complicated because they are using Romano and Meza very aggressively, as they should. Simber and Richards, you know, you kind of do what you can with those guys and hope that it leads to a good outcome, which more often than not it has. And then you get to the question of Merriweather and Pearson and how they use those guys. And, you know, to me, Arden, over the course of the next few weeks here, what they can get out of Pearson and Merriweather is going to be a real variable in how they can do.
And let's find out. Because enough with the babying. Like, enough with looking for soft entry points and like, oh, we want to get him into low leverage and see what happens. Let's find out, man. Let's put him into leverage right away. Nate Pearson, to me, next outing should be in leverage, in my opinion. And I think his last outing should have been in leverage as well. Julian Merriweather, I'm throwing him right into leverage.
Yeah.
Enough. How often are you going to play with fire with like Trevor Richards doing his smoke and mirrors thing in the seventh and Adam Simber coming in the eighth and like giving up a ton of contact with 86 mile an hour heaters? Like at a certain point, the Blue Jays are going to need some strikeouts and they're going to need some swing and miss ahead of Jordan Romano. How often are they going to keep pushing Romano on the back-to-backs and, hey, can you get us four outs tonight? And hey, Tim Meza, who was just on the IL recently with elbow inflammation coming off of Tommy John surgery, hey, can you go back to back? Like Tim Meza, one of the best stories of the Blue Jays season, minor league deal, and has been Andrew Miller light essentially. Like, great, but let's get some more support in those late innings. Let's put Pearson and Merriweather into leverage immediately. You got 24 games left. Let's find out. If it's a disaster and it doesn't go well, whatever. You lived and died with the best stuff and with like the most, like, just imposing, intimidating, high velocity, wipe out sliders and curveballs. And in Merriweather's case, like 20 mile an hour difference between fastball and changeup guys that you have out there. I'm throwing them right in.
Yeah. It's all about winning those games and whatever gives you the best chance to do it.
Yeah. Ego out the window, like, you know, workload stuff and what, like, out the window, like, forget it. Like, just, it's time to win. And you got to put the guys who are going to have the best chance of helping you win on the field each night. As it relates to third base, how do you see that playing out, Ben? On this roster right now, you got what? You got Jake Lamb, you got Kevin Smith, Breivik Valera, and at Buffalo, you got Kevin Biggio. How do you see this playing out going forward?
It's a bit of a mess. It's a bit of a mess.
Don't love the options.
Yeah, it's not great. I think, you know, they've got so many great position players and so many positions where you just lock and load. Like, you're thrilled with the production you get, you know, at so many spots. But yeah, third base to me is a mess. I don't see any good options here. I think, you know, basically, when Espinal was around and he could give you that defense, okay, at least you're getting defense. When Kevin Biggio for the last two seasons was an above average hitter who could give you a solid game at third base defensively, great. Would be thrilled to see that version of Kevin Biggio, but he's hurt still, and so is Espinal. So, I mean, okay, Lamb, a guy who's kind of a platoon bat at this point in his career and hasn't really played that much third base. Or you can go to Kevin Smith, who, you know, frankly has looked overmatched, even though he's a good player, good prospect still. Breivik Valera, he's had some good moments, but you know, I don't see him as a starting major league third baseman on a good team. So to me, you mix and match. I don't see a solution here.
If you could get Biggio going, that would be a solution. Yeah. But that's like a big if, just considering the season that he's had and like even how healthy he is now, right? Like, he's been so banged up this year. He's had so many issues, and I'm sure he's still carrying like many, many of them. Like, from Kevin Biggio, it was like from day one of spring training where it was like, bang, he took a ball off his hand and like, boom, took another one off his, like, remember his like fingers were all mangled in spring. And from that point forward, it has just been like one thing after another with him, to like, to the neck, to the back, to the whole deal. Right. So how healthy is he? I mean, you know, where's his swing at? Like, how is he looking, Buffalo? That's going to be big. Look, if you get Kevin Biggio going, great. Like, let's throw him into this lineup. If he doesn't get going, yeah, I mean, is your platoon like Jake Lamb and Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
Or is it Lamb and Valera?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know, man. Do you have enough time to figure out who the hot hand is between those guys? Like, you don't want Jake Lamb against a lefty at any time. Kevin Smith, like you said, yeah, has looked, you know, eyes have been a bit wide at the big leagues for the first time in his career. Like, great season, Triple A Buffalo. But yeah, I don't know how much you're counting on from him. And Breivik Valera just kind of is what he is. I don't know, man. Sometimes I come around to it and I'm like, maybe Breivik Valera is the best of the bunch right now, honestly. Wow. Which, like, I know isn't saying a lot, but like, of the options, maybe Breivik Valera is your guy.
I don't know. He's also missed chances defensively. I don't love what I'm seeing with the glove there. Like, I think it's, and again, this goes back to how closely we watch this team, but you know, there's some aspects of it where it's just, there's not a great answer. And I think Randall Grichuk connects to that too, right? Like, in theory, at a time that George Springer is out, you would want Randall Grichuk to be the guy who plays center field and gives you consistent at-bats with some power. But Grichuk is not hitting at all. Like, it's not good right now at the plate for Randall Grichuk. So what that means is they're basically using Corey Dickerson in center field, a position he essentially hasn't played in 6 years because major league teams don't consider him a viable center fielder anymore.
Yeah.
So the Blue Jays are playing him there, hoping for the best, accepting the occasional miscue, which, by the way, has happened, because Grichuk isn't hitting. So this is the kind of situation you're bound to run into. Good teams deal with this, bad teams deal with it. It's part of baseball, but Grichuk to me is another one of those question marks.
As long as we're putting the lens in some of this stuff, like, I no more Corey Dickerson leading off. Like, we can just bump everybody else up, right?
Sure.
Like, we can just go Simeon leads off, Vlad, Bo, Teoscar.
Yeah.
The rest. Like, yeah. We could do that, right? I understand, like, Charlie's thing has been, oh, I don't want to disrupt the rest of the lineup. I don't know what evidence there is that batting order position has any tangible impact on performance, or that, like, not disrupting the lineup is, like, a reason to make a move like this. To me, the fact that the spot that has the, like, highest likelihood of seeing a late game plate appearance as the game goes on, a higher likelihood than Marcus Semien, who is, like, the hottest hitter in baseball right now, than Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is, like, the best hitter in baseball right now, is going to be Corey Dickerson / Randall Grichuk if they bring in a lefty.
Exactly.
So that's going to be the spot
that's
coming back up late in the game. I don't want that. No bueno. So to me, like, it's time to just remove that from the equation. Let Semien lead off again. Vlad, Bo, Teoscar, that's your top four until George Springer is healthy enough to take DH plate appearances, and then he can lead off.
Yes, that makes sense, actually. And, you know, you talk about disruptions. What about disrupting the starting pitcher? If I'm a starting pitcher for the Orioles or the Twins in the next couple of weeks, and I look at the opposing lineup and I see Semien, Bo, and Vlad, and Teoscar, I'm feeling pretty disrupted. You know, that's not a good feeling. So I think that's something to keep in mind as well.
Totally. What is going on with Randall Grichuk is another thing that, like, someone needs to get to the bottom of. Sure. It's so wild. Like, you look at his, like, peripherals, walk rate is pretty steady, strikeout rate pretty steady. Like, it seems like there is just, and this could actually be an optimistic thing where maybe he's just a small tweak away, but just seems like the contact is a little different on pitches in the zone. Seeing a lot of pop-up contact, like seeing him miss his pitch a lot on the plate. Like, so I do wonder if there is a very small adjustment to be made there that could, like, unlock him. But the thing is, I'm sure he's been trying to make that adjustment for some time now. And I mean, the Blue Jays have just, like, made it very clear in their deployment that they don't trust him in spots right now, and that he is not going to be seeing regular playing time because he hasn't been. And there have been spots where it's like, you know, lefty's coming in and Corey Dickerson's coming up, and Corey Dickerson makes the plate appearance.
Yeah.
So
exactly. Or Jerod Dyson is the one who pinch runs and goes to center field, right?
Right.
You know, Grichuk isn't slow and Dyson's faster, but I mean, they are prioritizing other players over Grichuk.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, I wonder what's going on there, but, like, when you look at least the selectivity and the swing decisions, they seem to be consistent with what Randall Grichuk's been through his career. The contact is just different. And I don't know, I'm not a hitting coach. I'm not Dante Bichette. I don't know what it is that's going on behind that, but that seems to be sort of the fatal flaw for Randall Grichuk right now.
Yeah, not a fatal flaw that you want to have to confront as a major league hitter, because contact is key and he's not making much of it right now. like you said off the top, it's going to be a fun few weeks. No predicting what's going to happen with this team or really with any team in Major League Baseball, but I'm really intrigued to see where it leads.
Who knows what we're going to be talking about next week. Like, this Blue Jays season has just been like the most improbable thing. Vlad's season is somewhat improbable. Simeon's raise is improbable. Like, the good stuff is improbable, and the really bad stuff has been really improbable as well. So all I expect for the next week, the next two, the next three, is the unexpected.
100%.
So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. His name's Ben Dixon Smith. My name's Arden Zwelling. Our producers are Andrew Norton and Drew Livingstone. We thank you, as always, for listening. We'll talk to you next time on At the Letters.